You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. As official White House photographer under Ronald Reagan and then Barack Obama, Pete Souza was an eyewitness to the unique and tremendous responsibilities of being the most powerful person on Earth. But more recently, Souza has gone from being an impartial observer of the man in the White House to a searing commentator on the current president and the issues we face as a country and as a people. Now, his transformation from photojournalist to activist is the subject of a new documentary titled The Way I See It. The Way I See It will open in theaters on Friday, September 18th, followed by a premiere on MSNBC on Friday, October 9th. And today, Pete joins me on the podcast to discuss the life of a White House photographer and what it was like to go from being a journalist on the outside looking in to being at the president's side all day, every day. He talks about the delicate balance between getting the shot and knowing when to back off, what it was like to watch President Obama's two daughters grow up and to be present for history in the making, and how sometimes even he got a little choked up by the moment. Then Pete explains his decision to go from being a fly on the wall to a very public and outspoken critic of Donald Trump. He compares the two most famous photos of the Obama and Trump presidencies and shares the Instagram post that earned him the nickname the King of Shade. Coming up with former White House photographer Pete Souza in just a moment. Souza is a photojournalist and best-selling author who served as the official White House photographer during the administrations of Ronald Reagan and Barack Obama. Now Pete is the subject of a new documentary called The Way I See It by Peabody Award-winning filmmaker Dawn Porter. The Way I See It opens in theaters this September. Pete Souza, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, Pete, I want to start by giving folks some background on you. Your first tour of duty, so to speak, as White House photographer was under Ronald Reagan. What was it like to go from being a photojournalist to being on the inside and sort of having, I don't want to say more of a publicity role, but the role of a documentarian in the White House?
Yeah, I did that job when I started that job when I was in my 20s. So I was sort of just starting out my career and, you know, through circumstance and luck, I ended up in the White House because I knew the White House photo editor. I came in the middle of Reagan's first term, didn't know him at all, had never met a president before. So, you know, walking into the White House and, you know, being able to walk into the Oval Office when other people couldn't was just, you know, quite a bit overwhelming the first several months, I would say.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you admit in this documentary that you weren't a fan of some of Ronald Reagan's policies, but I'm curious what you thought of him as a person. What was Reagan like behind closed doors?
He was a very difficult person to get to know.
Really?
His best friend was his wife. And I think that she is kind of the only one that, you know, really, really knew him. So there was this sort of like veneer to him where he just wouldn't let people in. That said, he was a decent human being. I thought that he respected other people from all walks of life. He's very amiable. I liked him as a person.
And Pete, I've heard you say that most of the behind the scenes shots of a president aren't usually seen until after he leaves office. But you also say that your favorite pictures of Ronald Reagan weren't from the big public events like the speech on the Berlin Wall, but these little stolen moments when it seems like no one's looking, oftentimes involving Nancy. Do you think Reagan's handlers did him a little bit of a disservice by controlling his image so tightly and not allowing the public to see this side of him?
I do. I do. I mean, you have to go back to that period of time, though. I mean, he got elected by his handlers controlling his image, mm-hmm. right? And we were also at a time when there were only three networks. There was Time and Newsweek, and that was sort of what everybody paid attention to, mm-hmm. especially in terms of visuals. And so it was easier for them to, you know, control the image for those sources.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, behind the scenes, I'm trying to make real pictures, authentic pictures of what's happening. And I think some of those pictures, in retrospect, I wish they had come out at the time. And they had it.
Yeah, and you make a good point here that that was before social media and Instagram and Twitter and everything. You know, nowadays the public thinks that they have a right to know their president right. on a personal level right. and have personal access to the intimate details of any celebrity's life. It's a very different era.
I mean, I'll give you a specific example. If you go back to, what was it, January 1986, and the space shuttle Challenger exploded shortly after takeoff. There mm-hmm. was a big tragedy. Reagan wasn't watching it live, but right after it happened, he retreated with his aides to his private dining room, and they had a little black and white TV. And I got this picture of them all solemnly watching the replay of this for the first time. And it's kind of a heartbreaking picture in many ways. And I remember the photo editor was like, "Oh, well, we should release this photograph to the media." And the Reagan's handler said, "No, we can't put this out." And it's sort of like when you look at that picture now, there's no reason why you wouldn't want to show him in that moment. And I think in some respects, that's where the controlling of the imagery had just gone a little bit too far, I think, in trying to show him as a human being.
And you returned to the White House almost 20 years after Reagan left office to again serve as the official photographer, this time under President Obama. This may be a bit of a dumb question, but what's the difference between doing that job as a man in your 20s and your 30s versus doing it in your 50s and your early 60s?
Well, I think there were some advantages to being an older, you know, I don't like to say older. I like to say seasoned professional.
There you go.
You know, having had the experience at the White House during the Reagan administration and not having, total access, having known Barack Obama for 4 years before he became president. So I already established a professional relationship with him. And I think that I was much more confident in my abilities. I knew how the White House worked. I wasn't intimidated by powerful people. So I was able to maneuver in such a way that I maintained, a level of access that not many White House photographers have had.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I could have pulled that off in my late 20s.
Yeah, I want to talk about that access. It's sort of a strange job because I assume that you have to have some kind of a relationship or a rapport with the president or else you get frozen out. But you also sort of have to be able to blend into the background and disappear in order to get those truly candid moments that are so great. How do you strike that balance?
Well, fortunately, I had as my main subject someone who understood the value of having someone like me document his presidency for history. So I had that going in. However, put yourself in his shoes. All of a sudden, you have this guy following you around all day, every day, taking photographs all day long. You know, that takes a little getting used to.
I'm sure.
And so there was a little bit of a, I don't know if I'd call it a dance, just me being aware of that and sort of, you know, sort of easing into it. And, it got to the point where no one minded that I was there, because I think I went about it in such a way that I wasn't interfering with what was taking place. I wasn't a nuisance. I wasn't, you know, I carried quiet cameras. I didn't use a flash. I didn't use a motor drive. And, I was kind of stealth about it. And so that I really felt, that you've heard the expression fly on the wall. I guess I was kind of a fly on the wall. Although I think people were aware that I was there.
But I imagine it must be hard to be a fly on the wall when so many of your pictures take place in the Oval Office. I mean, how do you disappear in a room with no corners?
Well, this is true. I mean, there's actually that one scene in the movie that came from, it was early on, I think it was like in 2009, somebody had gotten some video footage of me. And you sort of see, you got a sense of how I worked, where I'm just kind of like hanging out, and then you see me quietly making a few pictures. I guess I had a knack for being able to do that, as best as I can articulate it.
What is the typical schedule of a White House photographer? Or is there such a thing as a typical day in your job?
Well, there's typical days that when he's at the office, which it's funny because over the course of his administration, his start time got later and later. He's a night owl, and early on he was starting right at 9 o'clock, and then it sort of shifted to 9:30. But I would usually try to get to the office like an hour beforehand. And I also was the director of my office, so I had some other responsibilities. And it's kind of the only time I was ever in my office was early in the morning. And then I would just be in the Oval Office when he arrived every morning from the residence. And then, I would get his schedule. But, the schedule was kind of like a starting point with him. Like there's, here are these six meetings or whatever. But then things always happen in between. And that's why I never went to my office. I just, if I wasn't in the Oval Office, I was just sitting right outside of it.
Because
he might just like, oh, I'm going to walk down to the chief of staff's office. Or somebody shows up that you don't expect to show up. And and so I just basically hung around. That's what my day was like.
Yeah. Yeah. I love something that Samantha Power says in the documentary. She says that everyone on Obama's staff would freeze and sort of stand at attention whenever you would enter a room, because they knew that if the White House photographer arrived, the president was never far behind him. It almost kind of sounds like you were one step removed from being the president's body man.
Yeah. It was funny because that was especially so. Samantha especially saw that when we were headed to the Situation Room, because inevitably President Obama would be late. That's just, he'd always be 5 minutes late, 10 minutes late, 15 minutes late. And of course, everybody else is on time. So they're sitting around the table, they're chit-chatting. And then I'm a few steps ahead of the president walking into the Situation Room. And like when I walk in, the room just goes quiet. So that was kind of funny to watch.
Yeah, you had really extraordinary access because you were allowed into the National Security Council meetings and the Situation Room during major crises. What kind of security clearance do you need to have to be a fly on the wall in those kind of rooms?
Well, you had to have the kind of top secret clearance that enabled you to be in the room while they discussed these matters. I tell people, look, most of the classified material was in memos and writings and, briefing books and stuff like that. I didn't get those books, but of course I would be there when they were discussing these issues. And so because, I was in the room and, could overhear what was being said, I had to have this security clearance.
Probably your most iconic photo takes place in the Situation Room. And in the film, you contrast that now famous shot that you took of President Obama and his staff in the Situation Room as they awaited news of the bin Laden raid with a similar photo of President Trump during the al-Baghdadi raid. What strikes you when you hold those two photos alongside each other?
Well, what strikes me is the bin Laden photo is, you can feel the tension in the faces of the people, and it's while the raid is taking place. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Trump one, it's like it's not really clear what they're watching. Mm-hmm. It doesn't appear that it happened while the special forces were on the ground. Just mm-hmm. the timeline doesn't match up. So I don't know if they're like watching, you know, I don't know what is it, it just doesn't feel that it was during the raid.
Well, yeah. And I think you say in the documentary that it couldn't have been in the raid because you can tell from where the photographer is standing that he's blocking the screen that they probably would have been watching in the Situation Room, right?
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. Pete, let me ask you this. Do you think that Donald Trump gives your successor in the White House as much access as Obama gave you?
Well, I think that's for myself and the former official White House photographer, that's like the million-dollar question. I don't know. I have no knowledge one way or the other. We don't see those pictures. But it's possible they're being made. I just don't know.
Do you know the official White House photographer right now?
I do. Yeah.
Really? Do you speak to him ever?
It's a woman. It's a
oh, sorry, she.
Yeah. So no, I mean the last time I talked to Shayla was on Inauguration Day, 2017.
And of course, you were there on Inauguration Day to witness this transition of power from a person who you obviously have great respect for and believe is a decent man to. Well, Donald Trump, what was that day like for you?
Well, you know, it was my second transition being inside the White House because 20 years before or 24 years before I was with Reagan on his last day in office when George H.W. Bush became president. And of course, that was kind of a completely different feeling, right?
Yeah.
So this time around, it was... There were so many emotions swirling around in my head and in my heart too, I guess, in that I was like worn out, both physically and mentally. This job is very taxing in that it's, you know, 24/7, 365 for 8 years, you know, you just never get a break. And so I was looking forward to, that being over, that you know, there was this sense of release that it had ended, and I was I was being freed from this job in so many ways, but at the same time I was inherently worried. Because I didn't feel his successor was capable and competent to do the job. And I was seriously worried for the country on January 20th. I mean, on that helicopter as we're leaving the Capitol, that's what I was thinking about.
Really? Well, Pete, when you're there for the inauguration of a president and all of these powerful and emotionally charged moments in a presidency, actually witnessing history, how do you keep it together? Are there ever moments when you get choked up a little and can't hold it in?
For the most part, I was able to keep my emotions in check. But there are times, and both of them, two of the ones that come to mind are, you know, both in the film. One was the the day of the shootings at Sandy Hook School in Newtown. That was a hard day. And what was even a harder day for me was 2 days later when we went to Newtown and he had to console all these families. Mm-hmm. It's done in a private way, but I'm there to make pictures, and you can just imagine the raw emotions taking place. These parents had lost a 6 or 7 year old kid.
Wow.
2 days yeah. before, and what a circumstance to be interacting with the president of the United States. So that was, that was a really hard day.
Mm-hmm.
And I cried a lot that day. And then I think the other day had a swirl of emotions was in 2015, the same day that the Supreme Court upheld same-sex marriage, we also had to travel to Charleston, where President Obama gave the eulogy for Reverend Pinckney, one of the 9 African-Americans shot and killed at a prayer service. And that was an emotional day, and in some ways an uplifting day when he sang Amazing Grace. And then we fly back to the White House, and in celebration of the Supreme Court decision, somebody had decided to light the White House in rainbow colors. And it was just like, it is hard to match the many emotions from that one day.
And on a personal level, is it hard not to get emotionally invested in the president and his family? Because your job is not to be there as a cheerleader or propagandist for the president. You are there as a documentarian. And in that sense, you're sort of supposed to be dispassionate. But how do you do that when you're around him all the time, privy to his relationship with his wife, seeing him in his most vulnerable moments, watching his hair turn gray and his kids grow up?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's sort of this, it's an odd interplay where, you're photographing the president of the United States, mm-hmm. but then there are these moments where, you're talking to your friend, Barack Obama, and, you're talking about his family in a very personal way. And somehow I was able to, I think, do both of those things. Mm-hmm. There's been times in my career where I've done a long-term assignment and I followed one subject for, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it be. And you have that same sort of kind of relationship where you're trying to tell their story, but at the same time, you obviously develop a connection with them, very mm-hmm. personal. And so it's not, it's not unlike that.
Pete, up until recently, you've been pretty much apolitical, but a couple of years ago, I think around the time of the inauguration, you started posting these photos of Obama and sometimes Reagan on Instagram as a form of commentary on what's going on with Donald Trump in the White House. Was it a hard decision to go from being behind the scenes to taking a very public political stance?
I don't know that it was a hard decision. I mean, I kind of started out with it being mostly, done with a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back to my early Instagram posts, most of the time I wasn't even like commenting on what I was talking about. Like you sort of had to be paying attention to the news. And I think if you went back and looked at some of those posts today, you'd think, well, what's wrong with this post? There's no commentary here. But my captions were kind of subtle, and yet people picked up on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think over time, it probably like, I'd have to go back and look, but maybe like a year or more into it, I had just gotten so disgusted with how I felt he was disrespecting the office of the presidency that I think my Instagram mm-hmm. posts got even more and more pointed.
Right. And I think the first time you did it, it was something so benign as a comment on Trump's choice of curtains for the Oval Office, right? But your Instagram followers jumped right on that. And I think they gave you the nickname the King of Shade. Did you even know what throwing shade meant?
No, I knew what I was doing. I didn't know it was called throwing shade.
Okay. Well, you know that old saw that a picture says 1,000 words. And I think that you're a wonderful example of that, Pete, because the contrasts drawn by the photos that you post on Instagram often make a far more powerful and succinct statement about Donald Trump than you could say verbally. And as divisive as politics are right now, I wonder if you think that folks on both ends of the political spectrum are more receptive to a message that's delivered visually versus just an angry hate tweet.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things in the back of my mind is I wanted to remind folks that this, what's happening today is not normal. Mm-hmm. That this, especially for the young people,
yeah,
that it is not normal for the president of the United States to just, you know, lie his ass off every day and bully people that say something that's critical of him. That's not how a president should behave. And that, you know, one of the things we've seen lacking in this president is empathy. He just doesn't appear to have any empathy at all. And that, to me, is one of the most important characteristics of a president. You've got to have empathy, not only just consoling families who have, you know, a tragedy, but also being empathetic and understanding what people are going through on a daily basis. And, you know, to me, the presidency, he doesn't understand that the presidency is about us and not about him.
Yeah, empathy is a theme that comes up over and over again when you describe Barack Obama in this film. And he has been fairly reserved in his criticism of Donald Trump since leaving office, the DNC being the rare exception. He's largely honored the precedent set by his own predecessors in office of not overtly criticizing a sitting president. Do you feel like with your images, you're saying the things that he can't say, or maybe even like you're speaking out with his blessing?
Yeah, I don't, you know, one thing that I talk to him every now and then, I have never discussed my commentary with him because I wanted to, I didn't want people to think that he was somehow involved for one thing. But look, I'm not the only one speaking out. I mean, there's you know, Ben Rhodes, you see, sure, Ben Rhodes on TV a lot. And you know, John Brennan, the former CIA director. So I'm not the only one speaking out, but I think that collectively people probably, and I've never had like any kind of discussions with any of my former colleagues about this. This is just my perception, is that, well, actually Ben Rhodes talks about this in the film, which is that, you know, it, Barack Obama should not be reacting to every one of Donald Trump's tweets,
right?
You know, that his voice is
too
important. And so I think that's why you see not just myself, but others, sort of taking up the cause to say, hey, no, this is not true. This is a lie. This did not happen. Don't, you know, yeah.
Well, I wonder, what do you photograph these days now that you're out of the White House?
Well, it's been difficult with COVID. I mean, I'm sort of in the age group, and I've had lifelong asthma, so I do not want to get COVID. So I've been pretty much not been outside that much. I mean, I go for bike rides and stuff like that. I've covered a few of the protests here in Madison, where I live. But you know, I'm trying to be real careful. I haven't been on a plane since March 1st, actually, is the last time I was on a plane. And you know, I travel in my car, but I don't. You know, I'm just trying to like stay healthy right now.
Going back to your time in the White House, sort of to end on a lighter note here, I'm curious, what was the most embarrassing moment that you've had in front of a president? Maybe you walked in on something you shouldn't have, or had a camera malfunction, I don't know, left the lens cap on or something. What would be on the Pete Sousa blooper reel?
Well, there's probably a lot of Pete Sousa bloopers. I mean, there's one that's depicted in the film where, one of the jobs of the official White House photographer is to make photographs during photo lines where, you know, there's an event and here's the 10 people that help put the event together, or, you know, and so you've got to do the sort of standard grip and grins. And there was one time, this is early on, this would have been in 2009, where we were doing one of these photo lines after this event. And I filled my digital card I clicked the shutter and it was nothing there because my card had filled up and I was so flustered. I didn't know what to do. Like, all I needed to do was, reach into my pocket, pull out another card and put the other card in. Instead, I started like changing cameras and lenses, and because I was so flustered because nothing like that had ever happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. You know, it's a high pressure job and you're on the run all the time. I can imagine.
Yeah,
these
and
things
it was like one of those
probably.
things where President Obama, like, for probably about 3 months, he wouldn't ever let me forget that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Before we go, I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but if you could pick one photograph to be remembered by, do you know which one it would be?
You know, a lot of people ask me similar type questions. What's my favorite photo and things like that. And you know, for me, it was always about trying to create the best body of work. Mm-hmm. And the interesting aspect of the chief official White House photographer is you're essentially the only person that sees the president in all these different compartments of his life. And to me, all those different compartments are important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I might have like this great family photo, but it doesn't really illustrate what it's like for him to stress over a decision. Or I might have this, you know, photograph of him, you know, in a lighthearted moment interacting with some young kid, but it doesn't show him, you know, pushing to pass, you know, the ACA. So it makes it hard for me to like say, oh, this is my, you know, favorite photo. So I hope people come away appreciating the body of work that I did as opposed to a single photo.
And a truly remarkable body of work it is, for sure. Once again, The Way I See It opens in theaters in September, and Pete is also a great follow on Instagram at Pete Sousa. Pete, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Pete Sousa for coming on the show. The Way I See It opens in theaters on Friday, September 18th, and then it premieres on MSNBC on Friday, October 9th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Keep up with Pete at PeteSouza.com and follow him on Instagram and Twitter at Pete Sousa. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit KickAssNews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@KickAssNews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.